Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of all the Big 12 teams over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan all year long. So be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. They have this like three-quarter sleeve script Longhorn one that feels like perfect for like a Saturday or Sunday morning afternoon-ish game at the dish. So I'm just saying, it's like perfect for baseball weather. But if that's not your speed or you got somebody you need to buy a Valentine's gift for, maybe a birthday gift coming up, they've got 30 schools to choose from, so they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs. You can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215, that's TEN1215, at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm a host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who knows it doesn't really make sense to go from Fort Worth to Austin and then Waco, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, are you?
Besides being a road trip that I think I actually did with a friend of the podcast, probably never listened, Nick Britton, one time, what is the significance of Austin to Fort Worth to Waco? It just sounds terrible.
Fort Worth, Austin to Waco is Gary Patterson's.
Gerald, I actually blanked. I forgot that he ever had anything to do with Fort Worth because he tried to burn the memory and maybe the statue to the ground. I think it's absolutely wild. Like if you were to pick a way to most annoy the TCU fan base in Gary Patterson's last year before he was fired and said, what would be the worst thing that he could possibly do? I guarantee they wouldn't have even dreamed up both Texas and Baylor stints. This is a giant middle finger from a country music and college football coaching legend.
I don't know if he's trying to tear the statue down. I really think he's just trying to get in the door at Waco for when they fire.
Sure.
Fire their current head coach, but that's another conversation for another day. But we're not here to talk about our rivals. Well, we probably will talk about the other Big 12 schools. We're here to talk about baseball and softball. One of the seasons has already started, but the other one starts basically when you're going to be listening to this this week. But number 16 baseball, and the it's hard to call them their like number 8/5 because they just had a massive ranked win, so they're probably going to slide up. But anywho, the softball team already in action and doing softball things. We're going to do a quick preview of each of those on top of our normal coverage for the week. So we'll start at the dish and talk about David Pierce's Longhorns' eighth year at the helm was one fly ball lost in the lights away from a 39th trip for the school to Omaha. Had some off the field shuffling of the responsibilities, kind of trying to figure out another year, another offseason that the team did well, but apparently the coaching staff did not do as well as they wanted to. They shuffled some things around. Phil Miller is back into an on-field role. Tulo is at the player development. Woody Williams, no longer with the team. Steve Rodriguez is focused on the short game. And don't know who's going to coach third base. But then I think David Pierce probably himself is going to be coaching pitching because that's really where his expertise lies. So for Texas, there's a lot to replace. Lucas Gordon, Gary Guimet, Dylan Campbell, EK, Zane Morehouse, a lot of talent to replace. But again, picked to finish second in the conference, 16th in the country. It's going to be an interesting year. And again, the Big 12 is going to be very nasty.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument, right, that this last year in the Big 12, we wanted to win it in football. It would be tremendous to win it in baseball. They were picked like third or fourth, some places fifth last year, and won a share of the Big 12 out of nowhere. This TCU team is very, very good, and they're picked to win it. But Texas being picked second, there's an argument that, you know, it could really come down to maybe like see what Tech and Kansas State are, but maybe Oklahoma State TCU, Texas. There's some important series, games that will happen to determine that. But it'd be great to win because the SEC is an absolute murderer's row, more so probably in baseball than in football, which is crazy to say. You don't think it's crazy, but it's crazy to think when you think how good the football roster top to bottom is. So would love to get a conference championship because it may take a couple years to get that one in the SEC. We shall see. But this is their year. This is their year to maybe on draft day, the hopes of a lot of folks changed, right? Like think about we lost 8 players last year to the draft, rightfully so. You're losing Ivan Melendez, and it's going to be a big rebuilding season, and instead they reloaded. Texas had a lot of players step up who are already on the roster. Some transfer portal additions come in and go huge. And when draft day came, it seemed like there could be some depletion going on again. But Texas, honestly, I've seen multiple websites list Texas as the biggest winners from MLB draft day. They got almost like a second recruiting class by the players, or portal class by the players who didn't leave. Right? You mentioned Lucas Gordon, Guimet, obviously Dylan Campbell, incredible season he had, but the nightmare Zane Morehouse, they lost a lot, but they could have lost so more. I think Pierce said, there's 5 guys they didn't expect to get back. When you think LeBaron Johnson, who expects to be a first-round pick, and that's what he's playing for this year, Tanner Witt, Porter Brown could have gone. Jack O'Dowd, people weren't sure if he was going to try to take some undrafted looks. And then Peyton Powell said he got calls, but decided to come back. So all of those guys, in addition to only losing one of their 3 blue chip, out of this world potential to get drafted prospects, no one thought Travis Sikora was coming to the 40. He just was too good to ever play college baseball. But the fact they got a top 50, top 75 guy in Will Gasparino, again, that includes all the players who did sign. So that number probably skyrockets to like a top 10 or 15 freshman in the country. First baseman Casey Borba, who may not factor in as much this year, but down the road, the fact that they signed those guys, those 5 returners, those 2 potential straight to the MLB superstars, it gave some hope to this team, and I think a big reason why they're second. We'll talk about who else comes back, but just the fact that those guys who could have gone came back, and Peyton Powell said it. I think multiple of the players who were in that list I just listed, including Tanner Witt and LeBaron Johnson, said it. They came back for a national championship. Now, where the talent is, there was a couple of losses with injuries and other things where maybe expectations are being tempered, wait and see with still some talent departing. But David Pierce is a great coach, and he has a chance, I think, this year to prove if his coaching is truly national championship Omaha worthy, because this team is on the cusp. And if they make the right moves, get the right lineup, maximize the talent on this team, this is an Omaha team with all the aspirations that come every year with Texas baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, expectations are always high. And the wild thing, I wanted to say this, you mentioned it earlier, and this is not a comment on the football team, but more comment on the baseball. Texas is probably more likely to win a conference championship in football next year than they are in the baseball realm next year, which is absolutely just crazy to think about. But you mentioned the replacing, not a huge offseason portal. Mitchell Daly is probably the big name that you heard that left. Texas added quite a few from the portal, but 2 of the bigger names, Will Mercer and Luke Storm. Mercer is out for the season with an injury. Luke Storm stepped away from the game. So Texas still has a good mix of young and old talent. Got some depth coming in from the portal. Like I mentioned before, David Pierce is the pitching coach. He's going to have some help from Chris Gordon, who's an analytics guy. LeBaron Johnson is probably the name to watch. He struggled early. We were very critical of him. I think 2 years ago, I remember sitting in my old office and being very critical of LeBaron Johnson. I believe I called him a walking home run. But he is the one to watch this year. Golden Spikes preseason watch list, Big 12 pitcher, a preseason pitcher of the year, second team All-American, 8-4 a year ago. It is going to be LeBaron, Tanner Witt, and then who might be the third option there is the big question.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think most of the previews, most of the rankings that are coming to Texas are saying Pierce can coach pitchers. We know that, right? He's getting back to his roots, what he's one of the best in the country at, and what a great year to do it with LeBaron Johnson, who didn't start as a weekend starter and ended up as an All-American last year, right? Pierce credits his work ethic, his getting his mechanics right, because the guy has, as you know, three MLB pitches, right? A fastball that touches 98, a slider that, you know, breaks at the last minute out of the same arm slot, and then a splitter that's really come on as a great out pitch. And then you have Tanner Witt making the comeback from Tommy John with all the upside in the world. And Pierce has said he's just looked phenomenal the past few weeks. So that's you know, a great feeling. And then he really was raving about, you know, Charlie Hurley supposedly looking transformed from a year ago. The pressure's off him a little bit as a transfer trying to come in and establish himself immediately. He's feeling comfortable. It'll be curious to see if he locks up. He's the likely Sunday starter, but there are other options. He mentioned Cody Howard and the two Codys and Cody Loomis, if they want to get a, you know, another lefty in there with Loomis. You know, there are probably some innings eaters in the bullpen who could get some weekday starts and work their way in. But you know who the one and two are, in a lot, like a lot of years. You know, if Hurley can lock down and be solid like we saw from USC, use his big frame, you know, have some big Sunday key wins, you know, this could be a really dominant, the ceiling of those three guys with Witt and Johnson's talent that they have, and what Hurley could be again, what, like we've had in previous years, a top five, top 10, one, you know, 1-3 punch of starters, right? I think a lot of this will come down to who's the key reliever, who steps up, right? We know Dre Duplantier is, you know, a name that people are familiar with, has got major league stuff. You get big left-hander David Shaw, the 6'7 guy who had a minor Tommy John, as it was listed, could you know, pitch in any of the slots. I believe Pierce said this year he wants to give more defined roles of you're a stopper. You're a three outs at any time I need it, whether it's closer or in the sixth inning, like you're my three outs guy. And then some players who are 2-3 innings, more your typical relievers, and then, you know, your starters, you expect to get your six innings plus. So trying to define some roles more than he has, and as he's working with that group, it'll be curious to see who else from that group steps up.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at the, you know, Luke Hansen coming back from Tommy John, Ace Whitehead, a name that we've talked about quite a bit. Tool, Heston Tool, a guy from Arkansas, transferred in. Don't ever hate getting a guy from Arkansas. And then a JUCO transfer, Gage Bohm, is what we're going with, I think. Mm-hmm. Sounds right. But, you know, this was the issue last year. And I think that, you know, the Texas starters would really do a great job, and then we'd have to hold our breath for the bullpen. So I'm curious to see. And again, we know what David Pierce can do, and so hopefully having those specific roles, you know, I'm a big believer that expectations and job descriptions are important. That's what I do for my day job. Moving out to the infield and the outfield, we'll just lump them all together. Jared Thomas looked likely to move to outfield with that Luke Storm addition, but he will probably now hold it down with Luke Storm being out. Jack O'Dowd coming back at second base for a fifth year. Peyton Powell potentially at third base. He was one of the best players in the country, according to David Pierce. He could play multiple spots. Jalen Flores, who had a... he had some growing pains a year ago, but also flashed some of that massive talent that we saw. So I'm curious to see that. We have questions at catcher. Jaden Duplantier is a guy. In the outfield, Porter Brown is back, probably the star of the team. Center field could be a few guys. You've got Gasparino out there, who's potentially he's a top 50 recruit. Max Bailiu at right field. There are a lot of options, we'll say, for Texas. And I think that's a good position to be in, especially during the grind of Big 12 play.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a blow, right? When you're probably your two biggest transfer portal additions both end up missing the year, right? Will Mercer, the pitcher from Notre Dame, out with an injury. And then, as Gerald alluded to, right, when your presumptive first baseman in Luke Storm, who came over from Duke, decided he's stepping away from baseball a couple weeks ago, you know, that shuffled a lot of things. So two of your portal additions won't be there. But again, I think Pierce really likes the mix of young guys ready to step up, whether that's the freshmen last year who are sophomores now taking that big second year step forward, sometimes a leap, whether it's the freshmen coming in and hoping that they, you know, have the stuff and they can contribute right away, or, you know, some guys getting some opportunity who are already on the roster. He likes a lot of the experience there as well. So some mix of that. Again, Jared Thomas was likely to play center field, which is probably where he projects more more at the next level, though, you know, he's a pretty good defensive. I think he only had three errors last year, first baseman, so he'll likely go back there. Cam Constantine will continue to be the, he may spell him on weekdays, be the only other real first base option. He can play every position a lot, like Peyton Powell. You mentioned him, Gerald. I think Peyton Powell might be, you know, there's probably on the hitting side, right? We talked about some key pitchers, but when you think about who could raise the ceiling of this team, who could take this team from, you know, a top three finish in the Big 12 to Omaha and make a noise, I think Peyton Powell, the fifth year, who plays all positions but probably locked down third base towards the end of last year, I think the best defensive infielder in the Big 12 last year, absolutely robbed to not get first team all Big 12. But we always knew he had an electric bat, and he did it from as a freshman. He was a pinch hitting extraordinaire, and then last year really broke out. I could see him just having a super breakout year this year. He's just so consistent. He can do everything. Can he build on, you know, power has been the question, why he didn't go in the MLB draft. Can he build on those 10 home runs, hit a team high 339. So if it wasn't for the 38 game hitting streak of the other player who hit that high of a batting average in Dylan Campbell, we'd have been talking about Peyton Powell had a hitting streak of his own. He had some great games. So I think he has a chance to really drive this team, as well as Porter Brown, who played for TCU but really had his breakout year last year. I think with Campbell leaving, he'll be kind of the anchor, and especially Eric Kennedy also leaving with his 5 years of playing for Texas. He'll be the anchor in that outfield, and then it's building around him, right? I think you mentioned it. Will Gasparino, whose dad is the head scout for the LA Dodgers, a guy who, you know, is going to play in the MLB. It's just a matter of when. It's such an interesting outfield prospect. I've heard right field for him. I've heard center field. He's 6'6". Like, he's just a big, big player to be out in the middle of the outfield, cover some ground. Kind of has everything, right? Pierce said he's really coachable. So when you're 6'6", you're still kind of finding your swing as you're growing into your body. But he's been very coachable. So can he come in, keep the strikeouts down? And Pierce compared him to Drew Stubbs, which is an incredible comparison if you're at Texas.
That's a big shoes to fill.
If you're a Texas baseball fan, that one hits home. So that's exciting. And then another young guy, right? That's a true freshman, Max Beliu, who's the number 12 player in the 2022 class, who has, again, let's call it Dylan Campbell, Porter Brown, you know, breakout potential as an outfielder this year. That might be your starting three. He only had 20 at bats last year, but he's a guy who really, his biggest struggle, the only thing he can't do is, you know, when he hits the ball, it's great. His strikeout rate was too high at 40% last year. Some really got it down to 24. Can he get that to 20% or lower and just be consistently putting the ball in play contact? If he does, he's got all the tools to be great on defense, to be, you know, when he committed, Sean Allen called him the most pure left-handed hitter in the country. Like, he's got a lot just naturally going for him. Can he lock it in? If so, they'll hold some of the other guys out, because Tommy Farmer was Pierce's surprise standout of the fall. Could, you know, another freshman who could be fighting for some time. They got transfers then after that, Penn transfer Seth Worshon, San Diego transfer Casey Cummings, who homered in both the Fall World Series and the alumni game. He knows he's been making his impact when he gets a chance. And then Ace Boogie, right? You talked about him in pitching, but does Ace Whitehead still give him a chance to play? Just his electric speed, you know, is he going to be a two-way player? So in the outfield, there's some talent in the infield. You mentioned them all, but, and, you know, Jaden Duplantier, Cam Constantine will be kind of the rotation guys. Jack O'Dowd is a guy, as he comes back, I expect just to be, you know, that consistent plug at second base who can do a little bit of everything, come up with some clutch hits. And then Jared Thomas, right? Jalen Flores, Jaren Thomas, we talked about last year in our preview, were the freshman who had to come in if Texas was going to be good. And Thomas really was great. And I expect him to take a step up. Jalen Flores is an MLB caliber defensive shortstop. He's got incredible footwork and timing and arm with the leather. He's consistent. Couple freshman mistakes, but I think he's going to grow into that. It's really the bat, right? He's got to hit 250 plus, right? He's got to hit closer to 300 if we really want to do something there. Just a huge recruit who had those freshman growing pains. So again, if Thomas, Flores make that step up, if they lock down, whether it's Galvan or Schuessler, who missed last year at catcher, can step up with the defensive prowess that Guillemette had. Defense was such a strength last year, but we said that the year before it was such a strength when they had to replace Faltini. And that's just good coaching. If they can have that same level of consistency on defense as they had in the second half of last year, especially as they started with a little bit of wobble, but in the second half of last year, if they can grow into that this year as well, then I think this team, you know, has a chance to have some power, have some small ball, hopefully have some solid base hit. They have an identity with these players coming back. Now, they have to go show it.
And where do they have to show it, Kyle? Well, they get to do it at home for the first 8 games of the year. San Diego, Cal Poly, St. Louis Obispo, Houston Christian, St. John's, all at home. March gets a little dicey and spicy. They've got ranked teams LSU, Vandy, A&M, and Texas Tech coming to town, which brings us to some Podstradamus predictions. If you don't remember this, guys, that's brought to you by Prize Picks, which Prize Picks is the best legal way to play player props in a state like California, Texas, and Florida. You can also use it to play daily fantasy. You just pick 2 to 5 players on and over and under their projections. You can win up to 10 times an entry. It's just you versus the projected numbers. And all of our listeners who sign up for the first time and use the code LONGHORN12 will get a 100% instant deposit match of up to $100. They've got all sorts of different stuff. College basketball, NBA, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. Grab the app from either Google Play or the App Store, both rated 4.8 on the App Store. Great app to use to get it if you want to have a little bit extra fun while you're watching Texas baseball. So Kyle, spicy and dicey early season. We'll continue throughout Big 12. Kyle, what we'll do for our Podstradamus picks brought to you by Prize Picks this year, Kyle, is I want to see, where do you predict them finishing in the conference, and do you think they make it to Omaha?
I like them at second. I like TCU, unfortunately, with a lot of experience, with a ton of upside. I think Oklahoma State has a chance to be scary by the end of the year. People are talking a lot about Tech and K-State as being solid, but I think Oklahoma State, if they get it all together, could challenge for this as well. If you recall last year, I actually said West Virginia is a sleeper no one's talking about, and hence West Virginia being the team to beat last year. Texas stole the Big 12 championship from them with a 3-game sweep at the end. So I'm not tooting my own horn too much there, but I will say at worst, Texas is third. I can see them competing for a championship again in the Big 12, but I think it's just there's going to be some ups and downs in the season, and maybe they have a wobble, and maybe Sundays don't, you know, go the way they did in years past, that those crucial wins there after they've already clinched a series, that they let a couple go. I could see TCU still getting this and Texas coming in second, but Texas fighting through and still making it to Omaha, right? And that's just a credit to the strength at the top, probably 5 or 6 of the Big 12. I think that there's a lot of wins at the bottom half of the conference, but you know, you could have multiple teams who are dangerous in Omaha. So I think Texas probably finishes about where they're picked. I'm going to say second there, but does make Omaha. I'm predicting it right here. 39th Omaha's coming. No crazy lights happening here. I think the pick that I want to make is, you know, someone continues the streak of national leading stats, right? It was obviously everything that Melendez led the year before, and then the longest hit streak in the league, of course, going to Dylan Campbell. Can Texas have another national leading stat? I don't know. I don't know what it would be, but it might be like a strikeouts per inning LeBaron Johnson. They will lead in something at the end of the – a player lead in something at the end of the year. That's a secret extra spicy Lanyap in honor of Mardi Gras Lanyap pick that they will also have someone lead the nation in a stat.
I like it, Kyle. I like it. So, predictions for me. I also, like, it's going to be boring and say that I think Texas second feels fair for Texas. I think it should. TCU is just freaking scary. That's not really anything down on Texas. It's just up on how good TCU is this year. It's also a year in the Big 12 where, like, somebody could randomly knock off TCU, kind of like what OU did to Texas last year, just randomly. It was like, oh, we're going to win this one series and then suck for the rest of the year. So, it could be one of those years where somebody random sneaks up and does it. I hope it's not done to Texas as it has been in the past. But I think second feels fair. I really feel like it's like a second with a conference tournament win, so we can claim that Texas won the conference and be annoying like that, because that's how we do. And then obviously I'm going to say it, but I think Omaha is, if they don't make it to Omaha this year, it will be a frustrating year for Texas. I mean, you know, Omaha is the standard. Texas doesn't dogpile until the end of the tournament, right? Omaha is the standard for Texas. And I think after being one out away from it a year ago, I think it's absolutely valid that fans really want to see it happen again. So the baseball team will take the diamond. First pitch officially will hit right around the corner this weekend. And there are still tickets on sale. You can get them for $7. I might try to convince my wife to let me take the boys up there on Sunday. Moving on to softball. I said it in our preview that they're number 8/5, and I felt weird saying it because they'd probably move up. As we were recording baseball, it was released that the softball teams are now number 2/3 in the country. D1 softball and Softball America has them at 2. ESPN/USA softball and NCFCA USA Today polls have them at 3 after a couple of big wins to start the year. Mike White, year 6 for him after coming over under Chris Del Conte, and has a ton of returning talent this year. 14 folks with starting experience coming back, including the entire pitching staff from a year ago, which they were rocky at some times, but also you get better with age as you pitch. Pitching is kind of like wine. You generally get better with some age. So as they continue to age and mature, they'll obviously continue to get better. They also return 83% of the offense, which is absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I mean, let me start with the pitching real quick. They not only return, Gerald, 100% of the pitching staff, right, including 3 10-win pitchers. Mac Morgan had 18 wins. Sitlali Gutierrez won 13 as a freshman last year. And then Estelle Check getting her back as a senior is great as well with her 10 wins. Plus, of course, Sophia Simpson, who, you know, led, was 4-1, 2 saves, a sub-3 ERA, and led the team in strikeouts, right? So you kind of had her as a situation or, you know, a reliever as a different pace for some of the other players. So a really good quartet there. Like you said, everyone's back in a year more improved. I'll go more. Each member of that pitching quartet finished last season with ERA of 2.6 or lower, right? Simpson was 2.6 at the highest. Gutierrez at 2.0 flat. ERA was the lowest. And then they went and added in an absolute blue chip recruit, maybe the best freshman pitcher in the country in Tegan Cavan, right? She joins from Des Moines, Iowa, number 5 player in the country, the youngest player on the U19 national team last year. Just a player who's been dominant for years, didn't play high school softball because she was good enough. She just played club through high school, which gave her more competition. But even still in club, and these numbers are just crazy, in 772.2 innings, she had 1,444 strikeouts. That's almost 2 strikeouts per inning. 13.
Is that a lot, Kyle? Is that?
It seems as though that is Osterman-esque. I will say, 13 strikeouts per 7 is what that comes out to. Just stupid. 45 shutouts, 6 no hitters. So you say, okay, does that translate, though, as a freshman? Well, we have some evidence because she has already pitched, and we'll talk about that a little bit. This is just our preview. We're cheating. But she's already pitched this past weekend, and she did. She got the second ball of the weekend. She started the second game. She's very good. But in fall ball, we also had that for our preview, she struck out 15 of the 28 that she faced in fall. So she is going to be an incredible addition to that, right? So that's the pitching staff. Bring everyone back, add an incredible freshman who, you know, White can deploy at the right time, which is great. He loves also getting the freshman bled in there, as he did with Sitlali Gutierrez. She started against her first pitching of the year was against a ranked opponent as well, the same as it was for Tegan. So as Gerald said, 83% of the RBIs and runs produced, you know, not too shabby there. Really just bring back almost everyone. And the key to the offense to me is star freshmen becoming even more seasoned and sure to be star sophomores.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, we talked about getting better with age. So Ashton Maloney, Viviana Martinez, Leanne Good, and Reese Atwood. Of the 532 hits from a year ago, they accounted for basically 45% of them, 239 of them. They also accounted for 37, almost 38% of the team's 370 runs scored, 45% of the RBI, and 46% of the total bases on top of 52 home runs. Just an absolutely murderous quartet. Quartet, is that right? Quartet's the right word. I doubted myself there for a moment, but it's fine.
That's a quintet. Isn't that 5? 1, 2, 3, 4? No, I messed up. It is 4.
Okay. It's fine. All right. You were thinking of the freshman pitcher that came in.
That's right.
It's all good. Quartet, right? It's fine. We've only been doing this for 7 years, but quartet of now sophomores continue to helm Texas. And again, we talk about it with the basketball team all the time, and it's the women's basketball team all the time, that this is a team built in Vic Schaefer's image. It's the same thing for Mike White, right? Mike White is going to want to dominate you on both sides of the plate, right? He's not going to be the small ball guy. He's going to be the guy who wants his pitchers to pitch a shutout and his batters to hit 15 home runs a game. Like, this is what he wants to do. He wants to be just the juggernaut, the Terminator. I can't think of another metaphor. Michael Myers, right? That's what he wants his teams to be. And the only thing really standing in the way of him doing that in the conference is another Michael Myers Terminator team up in Norman.
Yeah, and look, if they were in any other conference, Texas would be favored to win it, right? Spoiler alert, OU softball is still really good. There's probably three teams that open the season, and we're cheating because a week has happened, as well as Texas, and it's OU and Tennessee. Maybe you could throw Oklahoma State in that mix, right? It's basically those are the four teams right now who look the best. It's one weekend. But OU still looks really, really good. They replaced a ton. OU really replaced a ton, but more than like UConn women's basketball or Alabama football at the top, they just have talent in waiting, and they reload, and now the transfer portal, they're doing that too. Like, they're just, the rich get richer, and OU softball is really good. But if there's a team who's proven to be even a little bit of a rock in the shoe, a thorn in the side of OU softball, it has been Texas. And Mike White, you know, wants to be a fly in that ointment. So you know he's going to build this team up to you know, if they're good enough, as it feels like, you know, they have the talent to be, they're going to do things all year to win, but they're specifically going to try to build to playing their best softball when they play OU and steal some games there. And, you know, who knows? It's an incredible long shot, but who knows? Maybe, just maybe. But yes, if not for OU, again, Oklahoma State was a top 12 team. They're number 11, Baylor number 19, though they lost twice to Tennessee in this opening weekend. But spoiler alert, it could very well, I think OSU moved up to number 5, Texas moved up to number 2, OU number 1. It could very well end up similar to a couple years ago, where the final three teams left in the country are OU, Texas, and Oklahoma State, which, again, the softball conference is not the depth when you think of, like, for instance, men's basketball, right, where every team can beat everyone and they're good. But that top three at the top of the Big 12, and yes, two of those will be heading to the SEC, which is a tremendous softball conference as well. But, you know, with that top, no one can really touch that. For years, that was the way the Pac-12 was built. But, you know, Texas, we'll talk about it, just took care of maybe the Pac-12's best team in UCLA, as did Oklahoma State. So it's a strong start that maybe has got me drinking the Kool-Aid as I'm doing the preview here. But again, take OU out of it, and Texas has a chance to win it all. With OU, they know what they have to do to beat, right? And what a great thing that if the season comes down to Texas versus OU for a national championship every year, like, that's great. That's fun. That makes that game so much better and makes softball so much more watchable when you have actual blood feud rivals at the top of your sport.
Yeah, and we already know a bit of what Texas can do, but we'll get a really great view of it this coming weekend. So you said they took care of UCLA. That's underselling it a little bit. After a 3-2 win on Friday, they run ruled them 16-0 on Saturday to close out
that's
that tournament.
Number 8 UCLA, by the way.
Number 8 UCLA. They've also got coming to actually going to Clearwater, Florida for the Shriners Children's Invitational. They start it with number 2 Tennessee and number 9 Stanford. Oh, also number 18 Kentucky and number 22 are in that tournament. We will know what Texas is made of by basically the end of this weekend, coming off of a big weekend to open it.
Yeah, and I'll just say this, right? When you say big weekend, Gerald, they out dominant, huge, incredible opening. They started with a 19-0 run rule. Perfect way, no hitter to open the season. Fourth ever no hitter to open the season. Over the weekend, they had 4 out of their 5 games start with run rules, and they outscored opponents 64 to five. Again, I talked about that key freshman coming
Nashon,
in.
I was talking about, baby.
This is in UCLA's stadium, right? The crazy stat is they own UCLA's last two, now last three, home losses against non-conference opponents, the other being when they beat them in 2020. It had been 4 years since someone had come in out of conference and beat UCLA at their home. That's a really good team that Texas just ragdolled. In the first game, it was freshman Tegan Cavan coming in and throwing five shutout innings, one of her two wins on the weekend, you know, and then Texas gutted it out. I'm glad they got one that was a character win as well, because otherwise it felt like they were hitting off a tee. They were just out there, you know, playing JV scrimmaging teams. They were just dominating them. You know, they had back-to-back-to-back homers against San Diego. They had multiple grand slams in game two against UCLA. They were just incredible across the entire weekend. 10 home runs, 59 RBIs, 29 walks. They really were doing kind of everything that you were looking for. And at the you know, point of that spear, the pitching was great. We knew Viviana Martinez was going to be incredible, and she was, with two home runs and 10 RBIs. Mia Scott, who we know, you know, is an All-American likely player, you know, had 8 RBIs. But Reese Atwood was phenomenal and was named the not just the Big 12, but the NFCA National Player of the Week. So huge start for the Texas Bats, and specifically for Reese Atwood.
Massive start for the Texas Bats, massive start for Texas. 5-0 on the season. Will move. Hopefully they'll end the weekend 10-0, but we'll talk about that next week. But that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40, starting with that men's basketball team, the rare unranked matchup in the Big 12. Absolutely puts the boots to West Virginia, 94-58. Makes it really frustrating that they lost to West Virginia earlier in the year, but that's neither here nor there. 90 of the 94 points came from Texas starters, with all five of them coming in double figures. Again, we've seen the highs of this team. We've seen the lows of this team. This is very much a high.
Yeah, after losing four of their last five at home, they needed this. They need, and those, again, and that's a misleading stat, were some really close games, an overtime game to U of H, a really good team, right? They needed this, though. They needed a get-right game. Tyrese Hunter needed a get-right game, and boy, did he get one. Dylan Dessou is just continuing to be hot, proving it wasn't a fluke at the end of last year. Max A. Smith's continuing to do what he does. Dessou, 27 points, a career best 7 of 10 from the three. 3 assists, 2 steals. He actually is now... This was crazy to me when I heard the stat. He's not just hot right now. He's currently the top 3-point percentage shooter in the country. Like, he's wet with it. You know, he lived by the three, dive by the three, but right now he is living, and living is good. Proving he can be an NBA stretch big if he can shoot like this consistently. He had 19 points in 13 first half minutes, right? He was perfect from the field, just the fourth UT player to be perfect with at least 7 field goal attempts and a half. Usually those are, you know, if you look at that list, guys like Chris Mim, who just, you know, laid it up 7 times. This is a dude just draining it from deep. So Dessou was just, the bucket was looking huge to him. He was named the Big 12 Player of the Week for his effort. And then it just came right before we recorded this, also named the National, Oscar Robertson National Player of the Week. He had averaged 27.5 against, of course, this West Virginia and back to Iowa State as well. In 28 minutes, he was shooting like 80% at one point over those two games. Just an incredible run. And again, shooting that from deep. This isn't layups we're talking here. You know, also had 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 steals, 2.5 assists in those games this past week. So if Dessou can do this, this is what we were looking for. This is what the end of the year teased us. If the pick and roll of Asemus and Dessou, if the running the court and pulling up for threes can lead them to open shots, if in the half court those are your two ball guys, if Tyrese Hunter is doing what he does and limiting the turnovers and making smart plays, and everyone else is getting involved, I mean, this looks like the formula. Let's not over you know, get our hopes up, get too optimistic, because it's not a great West Virginia team, but they set a you know, season worst 26 turnovers the first time and got that upset loss to them in Morgantown. Then this time they have only 5 turnovers with a 29-6 margin in that category. If they're protecting the ball like that, they're shooting, they're efficient, their team rebounding, doing those things, this team looks not just like a tournament team, but a team you don't want to see come the end of the year.
again, we've seen the highs of this team. Chendall Weaver coming in, playing really well for Texas. Yeah, not so well for the backboards in Morgantown, but that's another conversation for another day. But efficient, they're moving up in net, they're moving up in all that. Seemed like a guaranteed tournament team. They've got a rare weekday off, but up next for them, another test heading to Houston on Saturday, and then Monday they've got Kansas State, that just knocked off Kansas in overtime. Number seven, women's basketball goes to Fort Worth and smothers TCU 65-43, 30 points under their scoring average for the year, 18-1 run in the third quarter to put the game away. Another just clinic from Vic Schaefer's ladies.
Yeah, 19 bench points. They assisted 20 out of 27. That's everyone getting involved. That's spreading the ball around. Those are Vic core philosophies. Shea Holly led Texas with 14 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. Maddie Booker does what she does, double digits, 13 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. They're up to 5th in the most recent poll. This was the stat, you know, of course, is if they can hold them under 60. Gerald, the stat this year that we should be tracking is how much they're holding teams below their season scoring average, and total that up over the season. It's pretty incredible every week when they're holding teams to sub 30% shooting and 20 to 30 points lower than their season average. Like, it is a different game than the rest of your schedule when you have to play a Vic Schaefer defense, and especially when they're going 10 deep and they have the energy and they can swarm you, and everyone is playing this team first basketball. Oh, remember, this is a top five team without one of the best players in the country in Rory Harmon. So kudos to Maddie Booker for stepping up again. But I like it. This is a Vic clinic in coaching, and how you respond to that adversity, respond to that loss they had that was embarrassing, and now they're playing this incredible Vic basketball.
And not just for her efforts in this game, but for her efforts all year, Maddie Booker, named to the 30-person midseason Naismith watch list. So much up, much deserved for her. Up to number 5 in the most recent polls, they've got Houston in Houston on Wednesday. Moving quickly through the rest of our Down the 40, because there's a lot. Number 4, track set some records over the weekend, a 4x4 relay record from Logan Pelpka, Elijah Mosley, John Rutledge, and Brian Heron. The women also ran the 12th fastest in school history, sweeping the shot put. Yusuf won the 600, Haftu won the 5,000, still too many meters. Isaac Alonso won the 3,000, also too many meters, with the third best time in school history. The Nugent and Kalia Smith both earned Performer of the Week honors for their records in the week. On the hard surface, the number 10 ladies had a good run at the ITA indoors. They beat A&M, which is something always makes the weekend great, 4-2 to make their fourth straight quarters. Then they fall to Oklahoma State 4-3 in the quarters, and then beat Ohio State in the consolation match on Sunday 4-3.
Yeah, it was a tough one, right? In you know, great A&M showing. The only loss was to the number one player in the country who happens to play for A&M. I hate that. Number 20. Yeah, and but they did get a win over number 24. And Oklahoma State was really tough, but the man, they fought back, dropping doubles in the first two singles. They were down 3-0, but rallied to push the Cowgirls all the way to the third set tiebreaker in the final singles match before coming up just short. You know, Hart, I appreciate it. That Oklahoma State team is really good. Unfortunately, it came down to number 122 versus number 120, and Charlotte Shavatapone took it all the way to the tiebreakers. Couldn't quite put it away. Would have been a great win for them, but a really good finish with you know, getting the consolation against Ohio State, getting those two wins at the indoors will give them the confidence for the rest of the season as they head into outdoors and more. But I mean, would have loved a little bit more to get that win against Oklahoma State because it's in conference, but again, that's an Oklahoma State team that could be looking at all kinds of silverware this year. They're pretty darn good, and that's going to be Texas's main opponent this season.
Yeah, Oklahoma State tennis is quite good each and every year. On the men's side, they down Florida 4-3. They actually won the match at 4-1, and then they played it out. They lost the doubles, which is a rarity, but got 4 singles wins out of it. The 7th time meeting Florida in the last 5 years, which has become a bit of a rivalry. It's the first time Florida wasn't a top 10 team in that matchup. Now Texas heading to New York to try to do what the ladies couldn't and win the ITA National Indoors, which starts on Friday. Men's golf, keeping it country club at the Amir Ari in Hawaii. The field has 9 ranked teams, including numbers 1, 2, 5, and 7 with them. Obviously, the Longhorns in there. Christian Moss recorded his collegiate best 18-hole score with an 8-under 64 on the Ben Hogan watch list for his season, because he's probably going to be one of the best players in the country. In the Natatorium on the men's side, number 2 women win at SMU 153-118. The men, number 9, win over the same Water Ponies 162-137. This was the final dual meet for Eddie Reese, who finished his career with a whopping 323-88 record. He will, however, be the coach of the 2024 Olympic trials, I guess. So he'll be retiring here later this year fully. Massive career, and massive big ups to him.
We'll give him his shine when that officially comes. But 13 wins for the women, 11 for the men. Women set 2 pool records. They were on fire in the water, as Gerald alluded to. Up next, the Big 12 championship is coming February 27th to March 2nd in Morgantown. Gerald, let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. The main Super Bowl rivalry was UT coach versus UT defensive end, but unfortunately he was injured. So Chuck Omenihu did get a Super Bowl ring with the Chiefs winning. Unfortunately, Kyle Shanahan could not become the second Longhorn coach to win a Super Bowl. The real question, Gerald, and he tweeted out wondering, and I am curious, Keandre Coburn wants to know, does he get a ring? He did start the season on those Chiefs.
I don't know how that works. I really don't. I mean, he didn't play. Like, Charles Omenihu probably is also going to be frustrated by his ring because he didn't get to play, right?
But right.
Like, a ring is a ring. So, like, it feels weird for a guy who wasn't actively on the team when it happened to do that. I don't know. I don't know how that works. Probably right. Not is going to be the answer I'm going with.
Well, the Longhorns look to bolster their chances at more players in the Super Bowl next season, with 11 Longhorns called up for the NFL Combine, 7 offense, 4 defense. That Combine will be taking place here shortly, a couple weeks, 226 in Indianapolis. I've seen projections with as many as 6 in the top 60 for Texas. Of that 6, they're in the list called to the Combine. Really, really great when you think back to where we were a few years ago. I'll just run through quickly. Running backs, plural, Jonathan Brooks and Keelan Robinson. Wide receivers and pass catchers, plural, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Werther, Jordan Whittington, tight end Jatavion Sanders. Offensive lineman, Christian Jones. Defensive line, Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. No surprise there. Linebacker, Jalen Ford, and then DB, Ryan Watts. Gerald, any surprises in that list or any comments on the state of Texas and the 2 years removed from 2 people invited to the Combine and no picks after a 5-7 year?
Tied for 3rd most in the country with the Georgia Bulldogs. 1 more than the vaunted Alabama Crimson Tide. How far we've come in just a few short years.
They'll have another chance to show what they got. Football Pro Day announced for 3/20. Those guys, amongst others, who weren't invited to the Combine but will be hoping to go to the next level, will be on display there. Depending if people show out at the Combine, they may choose not to do Pro Day, but you know, some may choose to improve times or go a second time there. So we shall see after the Combine who all is slated to compete there. A couple basketball items, or I guess a big basketball item that we're tracking. Max Asemus continues to climb the ranks, Gerald. This week passes Oscar Robertson for 12th all time, and the name he's just behind is one of my favorites in NBA or college basketball history.
Hersey Hawkins probably will pass them in a couple of games, 1 or 2 games. We get to see really cool things happen on the 40 acres, and it's just another one.
Another one of my all-time favorite nicknames, Hersey Hawkins. The Big Kiss was his nickname. So there you go. Great company for Max Acemus, the absolute most Acemus you can do. He's max. Men's swimming, Noah DuPerry was the Big 12 diver of the week. Camden Taylor, the Big 12 newcomer of the week on the women's side. Kelly Pash, Bridget O'Neill, and Angie Coe swept the swimming, diving, and newcomer awards. And then Texas showed out a bit in the World Aquatic Championships in Doha. Some active Longhorns, plenty of former Texas X's swimming in this one. And this is like the last big thing before the Olympics. This is how you qualify in a lot of cases for the Olympic teams for your country. The World Aquatic Championships is a big deal. Luke Hobson and Carson Foster were part of the 4x1 freestyle that won bronze with two non-Longhorns who are also training in Austin with Eddie Reese and Coach Wyatt Collins. Hobson continued his winning ways with bronze in the 200-meter free, his first career individual international medal.
Allison Gibson finishes fourth in the 3-meter, secures herself an Olympic spot, joining Haley Hernandez there. Paola Pineda, former Longhorn, finished seventh. Bridget O'Neill, Noah DuPierre finished seventh in the mixed 3-meter. Pineda again finished fifth in the competition she's competing for in Mexico, while Caspar Corbeau finished seventh in the 100-meter breaststroke for the Netherlands.
The way you pronounced it made it sound like France, but I love it. There was also a litany of other horns who finished just outside of the auto qualifier for their national team spots. There will still be those Olympic trials for a chance to get in there. Last piece of news in this section, Tashar Choice named Big 12 Recruiter of the Year. I don't want to say it's a given, but truly one of the best recruiters in the country at any position, just in the way he deflected praise, one of the best dudes in the business as well. So kudos to Mr. Choice.
Much deserved. The guy has his position room locked up early and often, and it's part of the reason why Texas is able to find such great offensive success is because, well, it's still got to run the ball.
All right, Gerald, let's take it home with our final two segments, starting with Godzilla Tron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Going to be brief, Be Bright, Be Gone. I'm reading the second book of the Expanse series called Caliban's War. I'm a big fan of it. It's, space politics and sci-fi stuff. Also, my wife and I are subscribers to the Dropout streaming service, which is, I would argue, the most bang for your buck on a streaming service. $6 a month gets you all sorts of fun stuff, but we are big into Game Changer. It's a kind of in line with Whose Line Is It Anyway situation, where the rules of the game change every episode, and it's funny. It's stand-up comedians and improvisers having to play that game, or maybe Taskmaster is another way to think about it. So really, really fun. We've watched 5 seasons of it. The 6th season just premiered this week. Breaking News is another one of their great shows. They're 6-minute episodes in which, again, improvisational comics have to read funny news stories without laughing or smiling, and there's a competition for that. And then, obviously, what they are known for, Dimension 20, is like their tabletop role-playing game, Dungeons & Dragons thing that got them really famous, but it's the artist formerly known as College Humor, the COO of College Humor, basically bought the brand from the old company and rebranded it as the $6 a month streaming service, which is great. My wife and I get a ton of value out of that $6. It is not for the kiddos, though, because they, they use some of the wordy dirds every now and again.
Okay. I've been watching, Gerald, a bit all over, but the main thing has been Fargo. I think I talked at length about rewatching with my wife Fargo season, watching for the first time season 2. I don't think I've mentioned that we continued on, which I'm glad. That you can watch one season. It's like standalone. There are some
anthology series.
There are some connective tissues, of course, that are almost Easter eggy when you see them in each season. But we went ahead and watched season 3, which I really liked. It was equally dark, but in a slightly different way. Ron Weasley's dad, I think, is how he's best known, plays the villain, and oh boy, is he good in Fargo season 3. Just I thought everyone, it was strong. It wasn't as good as season 2, and that's, again, tough comparison, but I thought it was really great. Very dark, very, again, Midwest dark, just resonates with me for some reason. So we went on to Fargo season 4, which were maybe 2 or 3 episodes in. And it's a very interesting and stark contrast because season 4, if you remember, leaves the Midwest a bit, or proper Midwest, heads down to Kansas City, who's always a part of the first couple seasons of the show with the Kansas City Mafia, but heads down to Kansas City and really focuses on, so far, the kind of Italian Mafia and the black mob, if you will, led by Chris Rock, which is really interesting casting. I don't hate it, but it's just taken me a little while to get into him as like the big bad. But he plays it well as the more crafty Chris Rockian villain, and as opposed to just being a big giant brooding bad. But it'll be interesting. I once I get to the end, my full take on it. But yes, it's a slightly different view than your just typical Midwestern aw shucks type of insidious violence that Fargo is so well for. It's a almost classic mob tale between the black mob, Italian mob. So it's a little bit different so far, but interesting just how they started it with basically this one place and the last person off the boat, basically, you know, stepping up, and whoever has the least seat at the table scrapping to steal and take the power and position, and then they get comfortable, and then someone else comes in, and we're basically at the precipice in the 20s, 30s, maybe, of this Italian mob kind of getting too comfortable and the black mob coming in and trying to seize power. So that's what this season's about. It's quite good so far, but again, if 2 was the high point and 3 was a step down, early returns is 4 maybe a little bit of a additional step down, but we shall see. Still good. Fargo, I think their B stuff is still better than a lot of people's fastball. So enjoying 4 and again, giving my full B+, A- for season 3 as well. Very solid, strong recommend.
But that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum. Brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on quickly this week?
Quickly, I am not banging the drum on what I thought was some kind of AI-generated troll job when I saw that Texas had a commitment from McCoy Bruce, right? That's not Brew McCoy put through a name generator. They actually got a two-way player from Bernie, who was a District 14 player of the year. Seems to be a solid walk-on, probably DB. But yes, that one took me aback. I had to read it like 4 times before I understood and believed it. But what I am banging the drum on is a really cool moment that happened, and is the continuation of a series of cool moments. There's a golf super fan in Austin, and so therefore a UT Longhorns golf super fan named Sonny. I'm hoping I get his name right. And if I don't, forgive me, folks, but I believe it's Schiantarelli. Sonny Schiantarelli, who was, if you think back to Coach Fields and the Cootie twins in the last national championship from Texas, he was kind of their secret. They wore Sonny Strong bracelets. He was someone who the players had a lot of quotes about, saying like, we were playing for him, winning for him. Like, he seemed to be, because he's a local Austin kid, he was going through cancer treatment, going through all of this, and then would immediately go out on the golf course. It was where he found his peace and his space. And he actually is a pretty solid golfer himself. But there was a really cool moment. His make-a-wish came true this past week at the Phoenix Open, the Waste Management Phoenix Open, one of the most fun events on tour, of course. And he got to play with Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth set him up for his shot, and then they brought Sonny in to hit the shot to knock it on the green. Like, really cool, playing at the PGA, playing in front of a raucous, roaring crowd, playing with Jordan Spieth. He got to have some time as well with Scottie Scheffler. Living everyone's dream. We've probably listened to this podcast if you're a fan of golf at all, but just, it's the type of cancer he has is a type of cancer that could go into remission, but there's a good chance of it coming back. So you're basically diligent. So he's living his life to the absolute fullest, and anyone who chooses to, when they think of living their best life, associate it to be around Longhorns and golf are two things that I can absolutely vibe with. And so, Sonny, for all of our listeners and for the two hosts, we're cheering you on here as well, just as hard as all of these incredible Longhorn golfers are. And though I haven't had the chance to meet you as they have, you have two giant fans of yours right here.
Absolutely. Always pulling for Sonny, I'm banging the drum this week on another one that we're putting our horns up for. Steve Mongo McMichael was named an NFL Hall of Famer in the 2024 class. You may have, if you watched the Super Bowl this weekend, seen his lovely wife accepting his honor because Steve is battling ALS. He kind of went public with his diagnosis 3 years ago, and if you've ever seen somebody that's dealing with ALS, it is debilitating, it is heartbreaking, it is tough to see. But it's awesome that he was able to be around for this. They weren't sure that he was going to be around for this. And so now he has gotten to see it. He got to see his wife accept that award for him. He was an integral part of that 85 Bears defense, the one that everybody talks about. One of five defensive tackles with at least seven seasons of more than eight sacks. Franchise record for the Bears, 191 consecutive games, 847 tackles, 95 sacks, 13 forced fumbles, the sixth Longhorn to go into the Hall of Fame, joining Earl Campbell, Bobby Dillon, Tom Landry, and Bobby Lane, plus Tex Schramm is in there as an executive as well. So horns up for Mongo McMichael. We are thinking of you, praying for you and your family, and congratulations on this well-deserved honor.
Yeah, a guy who I first knew as a kid as a wrestling fan. I knew him, and then I found out I'm of a certain age about his football playing career, and then I found out that it was at Texas. Right at first was my dad told me no, he was the that guy, the wrestler, was, you know, maybe the most integral part of the vaunted 4-6 defense, being you know, the nose tackle in that specific defense. Obviously there were legendary Hall of Famer players on that defense who've already gone in, but to, that was such a crucial position in the way the 4-6 worked, and his ability, like Aaron Donald now, when you think of defensive tackles, John Randall, like the guy. Yeah, Byron Murphy, the defensive tackles who get to the quarterback, right? He was just so good, played with his hair on fire downhill the whole time, just causing a ruckus. So fun for me to figure out he was, in fact, a Longhorn a little bit later in life and tie it all together and know him a different way. But yeah, we're thinking of you. And again, his fight to even be here to see this award, I'm sure it must just be such an incredible feeling for him and for his family, and we continue to cheer him on in his fight against Lou Gehrig's, which is a nasty, ugly, awful fight to have.
Horns up for the McMichael family. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, potentially, with a really special guest. Stay tuned for who. But until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em, Gerald. It is, as they say in New Orleans, laissez le bon temps brûler. Let the good times roll. Happy Mardi Gras.